Here's our series on aging in Portland. Retired or rewired? What it's like getting old in a youth-centered city. Are you up for that challenge? We'll bring you lots of views, but you'll have to answer this question for yourself. Is Portland a good place in which to grow old? My name is Tom Flynn. Today we're speaking with Ann Hill and Dr. Marion Hodges. Together they've written a series on caring for people with dementia. It's called Help Is Here. Let's talk about dementia and how families and caregivers can deal with it. Welcome to KAPU.
We're happy to be here.
You have a project called Help Is Here. It's really fascinating, working with people with dementia. And you're a lawyer, Dr. Hodges. You're a geriatrician.
Yes.
How did you two get together?
My practice is for persons mostly over the age of 80, and Anne brought her mother to me very soon after her mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's to be a new patient of mine. And I took care of Anne's mother for about 10 years before she died of her Alzheimer's. After her mother died, Anne called me and asked me to coffee, which was an unusual invitation. And I said yes, very intrigued as to what she wanted to talk about. And during that coffee hour, she thanked me for being a good doctor for her mother. But she also told me that during her own personal journey with breast cancer, she had received 4 separate notebooks from the Providence Cancer Center on various things, such as what to expect with chemo, what to expect with radiation. And she mentioned to me that she had never received a notebook from me about what to expect with her mother's journey with dementia. And I told her, boy, you're so right. And I wish I had something, Anne, to give you that I felt good about. And so I don't. So I never gave you anything. And she said, well, why don't we write that notebook together? And so I had a moment where I thought very quickly and said, wow, what an opportunity to do something I've always wanted for my practice. And so I said, yes.
And you're a lawyer. How did you turn to writing, especially in the health field?
I'm a lawyer by training. I practiced law for not quite 20 years. I was in-house counsel for First Interstate Bank when Wells Fargo bought First Interstate Bank and fired all the lawyers in Portland. We had, my husband and I had small children, so we decided I would stay home for a couple years until maybe they were a little further on in the school system and maybe go back in middle school. But by the time that the boys were heading to middle school, my mother clearly was not well, so I wasn't able to go back to work. During the time after that, I actually wrote a first book called Unforgettable Journey, Tips to Survive Your Parents' Alzheimer's Disease, which, because I was a lawyer, I asked Dr. Hodges to look at, even though it didn't contain any medical kind of information. So that was why Dr. Hodges knew that I could write.
There are lots of technical issues. Dr. Hodges, can you tell us a little bit about dementia? Like, what's the frequency of this? What causes it? What are the symptoms? Those sorts of things we'd like to know about.
Right, Tom. Well, you know, dementia is really brain failure. People understand heart failure and kidney failure, and that is really what dementia is. So the brain no longer acts like it should. And that is a lot more than just forgetting or memory loss. And in my world as a physician, it's when at least 2 brain functions no longer work like they should. And so brain functions include language, the ability to communicate, being able to make calculations like do your checkbook. It means being able to accurately perceive spatial arrangements so that you don't mistake a rug pattern for a hole in the floor. It means being able to exercise good judgment so you don't eat spoiled food. And so with dementia, commonly we see both memory impairment as well as another brain function that's no longer working so that a person can't live safely independently anymore. There's a reason that they need help from somebody else to get on day to day.
You said that dementia can be different in its incidence in different populations. And you talked about vascular dementia. What is that, and where does that occur more often?
Well, vascular dementia is the second most common cause of dementia in the United States, and it's dementia related to strokes, which can be either small strokes or large strokes. And so we have some populations that have a higher prevalence of vascular disease. Our African-American population has a greater risk of high blood pressure, for instance. Our Native American population has greater risk of diabetes. And so those two populations are more likely per capita to have vascular dementia than other populations, for instance.
I gather one of the things you do is diagnose the situation when people come to you.
Yes, although usually patients don't come to me complaining that they're worried they have dementia. Often people don't have the insight to see, especially if they have Alzheimer's, but it's the family members who bring the patients to me, saying something's wrong, something's different about mom.
I see a lot of isolation in our society. Individuals who don't have family networks or support networks. How do I diagnose Alzheimer's or dementia myself in myself?
Not commonly, but for people who live in an isolated way, like you say, and that is very common, we depend on other people noticing that something's wrong. So whether it's neighbors noticing that the mail is piling up, or whether it's somebody in a congregation or religious organization noticing that somebody's acting differently, or whether or not it's the bank noticing that a lot of payments are being made in kind of a suspicious way, that's how those people might come to notice.
And maybe you can answer this. You showed me projections of Alzheimer's as a disease over the next 8 years. What does that tell us?
There are going to be a lot more people with Alzheimer's and dementia in the state of Oregon every year because our population is aging.
Right. I guess I saw there that there are presently, oh gosh, in Oregon, 63,000 cases, and in 2025 there'll be 84,000 cases. So that's, wow, 21,000 cases, 3,000 a year.
Yeah, that what you're looking at, Tom, is the Alzheimer's Association 2017 Facts and Figures report. They issue this report every year, usually in April, so we'll see what they think of this year. They do monitor diagnoses. Remember, these are diagnosed cases, and there are a lot of cases which are not diagnosed.
Are we prepared in our hospitals and in our medical organizations to deal with this kind of vast growth?
No, woefully unprepared, Tom. It's one of the sadnesses that our society as well as our health systems are not ready. We are talking about Alzheimer's right now, but Alzheimer's is only one of the dementias that can happen. It's the most common in America, but we have dementias from stroke, from Parkinson's disease, from alcohol, from a disease called Lewy body dementia, frontotemporal dementia. And so we have millions of Americans with dementia. Right now, family caregivers provide most of the care, unpaid care, and we don't really adequately support them, and we don't adequately train our healthcare providers how to care for dementia, how to diagnose dementia, and how to support families on their journey. It's one of the things that got Ann and me together was our passion to really want to change the culture of dementia in first Oregon, but really our country.
Okay, you two wrote a series of Help Is Here. Is that what the general title, Help Is Here, books or booklets on the disease and how people deal with it. Tell us about that series.
The first book that we wrote is called Help Is Here When Someone You Love Has Dementia. We wrote it specifically for family caregivers. What we hoped is that when a primary care provider was diagnosing and delivering the news about a family member who has dementia, that they would simply be able to hand it to the family caregiver saying, yeah, I'm sorry, the bad news is that your father has dementia, but this will help. Read this book, and this will help you along on your journey.
The organization of this, the physical book, which I have in my hand, is really interesting. It's colorful. It's got tabs, which I guess you came up with this idea, Anne. The tabs are the section headings, things to know, 2, day-to-day living, 3, things to think about, soon. It's very clearly organized, very simple way, very graphic. So this is intended for the caregiver.
The family caregiver, the person in the family who is providing the care. We have learned that what often happens is once the family caregiver gets this book, that they will ask other family members to read it too. And it provides kind of a levels the playing field so that everybody in the family has a similar understanding of what's going to happen. It's very problematic for families that, especially in its early stages, Alzheimer's disease is episodic. It's not always there. And it's usually the family member who physically lives closest to the family member who has dementia that sees it. And starts to raise an alarm with other family members who may not see it. And, you know, if your brother lives in Chicago and comes to where you are, the family member with dementia may actually be able to pull themselves up out of it for a little bit. So the brother in Chicago won't see it in the early stages.
So this book is for that family caregiver. There's another book in this series. What is that one?
Well, so this is the book. The first book is the book that Anne wished she could have had when her mother was alive.
Right.
The second book we wrote for paid caregivers at senior residences, and that is Help Is Here When a Resident Has Dementia. So that residence can be independent living, assisted living, foster care, memory care, intermediate care facilities. All of those different residences where an older person might live with dementia. And this book is for everybody from the dining room staff to the housekeeper to building and maintenance, all those people who usually don't have training in how to interact with people with dementia. And yet it's very likely that there are many people in that residence who do have dementia, and it requires certain skills that we thought we could easily teach through this manual.
Is it dementia that puts people into these care residences? Is that the primary reason people go into those places?
It's one of the most likely reasons,
one
yes.
One of the most likely.
Yes, that and especially if that is the only medical issue, then it's usually when it's at least moderately or more advanced. And if there are other medical issues at the same time, then most likely all of those together can put somebody into a residence as well.
So the people who work in the residences, they may think they're dealing with somebody who's got severe diabetes, but actually the primary problem they're dealing with is dementia.
It could be, you know, this gets back to has it been diagnosed or not? And sometimes it's not diagnosed ahead of time and it's kind of flown under the radar and then it becomes more evident after the person moves. And or one of the times that we see it is when a spouse dies and that spouse has been basically covering and doing a lot of caregiving that wasn't recognized. And then afterwards, the person alone can no longer function as well as they need to live alone safely. And so then the dementia becomes unmasked.
By the way, there must be a lot of people in the United States and in Portland, in Oregon and in Portland, who are giving care. And it's a fairly consuming kind of care requirement, who are simply doing this out of family in a family situation. Can those people be paid to do this?
Usually family caregivers are not paid. Sometimes they're not even thanked In some circumstances, it's my understanding, in some circumstances, Medicare can reimburse certain, Medicaid can reimburse certain kinds of caregiving, but I'm not an expert in that.
What's it like being a caregiver to someone with dementia? Can you give us a feeling for that?
You know, it was interesting, Tom, because you said earlier that seniors tend to, many more seniors than usual tend to isolate themselves. And indeed, isolation can be a hallmark of developing dementia. People stop going to the sorts of things that they like to go for a whole host of reasons. It's also, weirdly, then extremely isolating to be a family caregiver. Usually family caregivers, especially if they're adult children, this happens to them at a time when they're at their busiest. They have jobs, they may have partners, they have children who may have lessons. And to add on top of that, caring for a family member who has dementia means they have to stop doing everything else in their life. It's a very isolating experience. And in fact, Dr. Hodges will tell you that the medical literature is full of studies that say that caregiving, being a family caregiver for somebody who has dementia, is a medical event in the life of the family caregiver.
It increases their risk for vascular disease or heart disease and strokes, increases their risk for cancer, it increases their risk for serious infections. You often hear stories of the caregiver dying before the person with dementia passes away because of not taking adequate care of themselves and becoming sick. And so we have a whole chapter in our book that is devoted to taking care of you, the caregiver, because this is so important that the caregiver forms a team to support their family member with dementia, but they also form a team to support themselves on this journey. We call it forming two teams and then using your teams. And so that team to support you, the caregiver, might be your best friend, a social worker, your doctor, a neighbor, a spiritual advisor if you have one, but a group of people that will be there for you, a counselor, who can help see when you're your energy is waning, when you're tired, when you need a break, so that you take that break, get the rest, have somebody else come in and do that work so you can rejuvenate and keep on being a caregiver.
So you have two teams, one team for the patient and one team for the caregiver.
Yes.
That's a great idea.
Exactly. But then people need to use their teams. We talk about it in Help Is Here When Someone You Love Has Dementia. We actually talk about it in two different chapters because we suspect that the first time we bring it up, people think, oh, I'll form my teams later. And they really need to form their teams early.
You've translated all this into Spanish, and you have a Spanish edition of this documentation here.
We do. We have recently released a translation of Help Is Here When Someone You Have Dementia in Spanish. It's a plain language, culturally adapted with all appropriate pictures, translation, and we're thrilled with it. It's really beautiful.
So this is the family book that's been done in Spanish. This is our first book. Yes.
Aquí está la ayuda.
Now, I wanted to make sure that we mention something. I think what distinguishes our book from the other resources out there on dementia is that Anne had the vision of taking stories to teach a lot of our material. And so in Help Is Here When Someone You Love Has Dementia, we have four stories of family members and the person with dementia that we take through the entire book. And each of the little, we call them vignettes, but we have darkly colored boxes that are little story events throughout the book. And they're all based on things that are real, that have happened either in Anne's history or my own professional history to people we know, of course, disguised. And the families who have read the book, Tom, tell us that that it's these stories that really have helped hook them into the book, that they see themselves, they see them their family members, that they know that this book is honest and real because of these stories. And also the stories don't always turn out so good. I mean, sometimes the stories have a little happy ending and sometimes they don't. And that's because that's real life. And in caring for someone with dementia, things go badly some days. And we honor that reality in the book.
The other thing we'd like to be sure to let people know is that our work is supported by Providence Foundation, which owns all of the copyrights to all of the Help Is Here books. The books are available at the Help Is Here website. Actually, I've never heard of the foundation making any money off the books, but if they did, it would go right back into the Help Is Here project fund that funds our outreach to people who care for those who have dementia.
So, Anne, what do you mean? The Help Is Here website, is that helpishere.com or what?
www.dementiahelpishere.org is our website.
Dementiahelpishere.org.
Yes.
All one word.
You're trying to get these into the libraries here in our area, is that right?
Yeah, we're trying to get them into the libraries. We're working on the Tri-County area. We hope to reach out past the Tri-County area after we do that. We're working very hard to reach out to clergy of all kinds, because with Oregonian aging, we know that there are people with dementia in every congregation in this state, and we feel like clergy and congregations need to know the signs and how to help their congregation members.
Does dementia always lead into a steady decline that ends in death? Is that where this goes?
Well, dementia is a terminal disease, Tom, and if you don't die from something else sooner, then you will die of your dementia eventually. So it is progressive. We have no cure, lamentedly, and we have nothing that really helps to abate the symptoms. That's where active research is going on, but hopefully in the next 10, 20 years, we'll have a lot more to treat dementia. And right now, it's supporting the family and the person with it and trying to make their quality of life as good as possible.
What do you see on the horizon? Do you see a cure coming, or is there research going on that will lead to a cure?
There's research going on into drugs that will help prevent some of the destruction of the brain cells that lead to brain failure. There's also research going into a vaccine, particularly for Alzheimer's. So there's lots of research going on. But yeah, I'm hopeful. I hope that in the next generation of clinicians, the next 30 years, we'll have a lot more.
Anne Hill and Dr. Marion Hodges, thanks for being here in KABU today, and thanks for what you do. Now we go back to the Hollywood Senior Center, a place we visited a few weeks ago. We speak with a volunteer there, Terrell Woods, who talks about the advantages of living in Portland and some of the resources available to elderly folks, including a county hotline at 211. Is Portland a good place to get old?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, for one thing, there's so many opportunities that keep you active, keep you young. I think being at home every day just really can be a detriment. To feel good about who you are and what you're doing, I think you need to get out and do volunteer work. It doesn't necessarily have to be strenuous, but there's plenty of opportunities.
And I should mention, Torella is here, and she's the only person in the gift store other than me, and she just sold me two items. She's pretty good at talking about this stuff. And the gifts there, by the way, are amazing, beautiful things.
And, you know, they are made by seniors, low-income seniors. So we take a small percentage for selling, and then they make a commission on this. So
okay, Terrell, tell me, are you from Portland originally?
I am. I've been here all my, I'm going to say probably 50 years.
Okay.
That feels like all my life.
But what is it about this city that makes it a good place to be getting old?
I think especially when I interact with other people in the senior center here, they use the mass transportation a lot. I mean, it sounds like it's easy for them to get around the city. It's also, there's so many other organizations that have opportunities for them to actually get from your door to the doctor's office kinds of help too. I also do some volunteer for another nonprofit called Project Linkage, and they actually pick up the people from their front door, take them to doctor appointments or, you know, whatever they need. And there's just a lot of places that help seniors. It's a matter of seeking them out, using resources that we've got here in Portland. A really good one is to call 211, and if you need any kind of help at all or you want to volunteer somewhere, they can answer just about any question.
What's 211?
211 was formed several years ago. So actually it's kind of like a clearinghouse. So I call 211 and I say, I really need some help in paying my rent this month. And I'm low income, I live by myself, you know, all those things that I might describe. And they'll say, okay, here are some agencies that you need to talk to, and they would give me references. The other thing is that, let's say that I need some legal service, I'm very low income, I can't afford an attorney, so I ask the people on the other line about 211. I say, is there someone that does volunteer work that's an attorney that can give me some advice? So it's a broad span of what you can get off of that 211.
I've never heard of it. Is it run by the city?
It started out being run by United Way, and I think it's still at United Way, but I can't remember. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking that at some point it did go to Multnomah County, but I'm sorry, I don't know where. I just know it's still working and people still access it.
Torilla, wouldn't you rather be in Arizona or Florida or someplace like that?
Well, maybe a couple times a year, but I love volunteering. I really do. It gives me such a perspective on the world, and I've made some great friends, and it just feels good to volunteer.
Do you think it's any different for people who move here to retire than it is if you've lived here all your life? Is it better or worse or what?
You know, I'm just wondering, having not been in that situation, I'm wondering, if you move here, you probably have to really advocate for yourself. So you've got to figure out where the resources are. They're there, but how do I get there would be the question. And I think you find that out by talking to your friends that are retired. We just did a volunteer fair here 2 weeks ago where there were 14, 15 organizations that were looking for volunteers. And so people came in and talked to each of the folks to find out what they need and how they could match up with their skills.
Besides the transportation and the volunteering opportunities, what other things about Portland do you think are really important for older folks?
There's great programs like Meals on Wheels that you can get meals delivered to your door. There are, I know there's some free clinics that you can take advantage of for dental care and that sort of thing. Again, that would be another one of those 211 questions. But I think, too, that Portland's really good about doing either giving discounts for seniors or having, like I know coming up, I think it's in I can't remember the date, but the zoo is doing a free senior day here coming up soon. Those are the kinds of things that seniors can take advantage of.
Well, that's it for today for Retired or Rewired. Tune in next time when we talk about criminal activity directed towards senior citizens in the Portland area. The phone is ringing, but do you really need to answer it? Baby, 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 baby.